This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, in this episode, I'm going to be discussing the optimal use of tests of inflammatory markers. We all request inflammatory markers on a regular basis with our patients. But there is good evidence that many of these are not only not needed, but may cause significant confusion when the results come through. There is long-term evidence over the years that the use of inflammatory marker testing is rising, particularly with C-reactive protein. So I thought it might be helpful to us to understand the primary uses of the different tests that we tend to use as inflammatory marker tests. Now, mainly, I'm going to be concentrating on ESR and CRP levels, but also I'm going to be thinking about plasma viscosity almost in passing, because those are the three ones that we tend to request when we are requesting inflammatory markers. Why do we do that? Well, they can give a good measure of someone's acute phase inflammatory response. However, and this is a key point about all inflammatory marker testing, I think, their lack of specificity can make their interpretation occasionally difficult. So, although they're obviously useful for detecting acute inflammation and for ruling out specific conditions, personally, I often try and avoid using them as general diagnostic tools. So, if we're thinking of ESR, CRP, and sometimes plasma viscosity, there are perhaps three main situations, in my experience, where an inflammatory response is activated. The most obvious, perhaps, is infection. Then we have certain specific types, but not all, cancers. And then we can look at autoimmune disease.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
And now, back to our episode.
So, other potential causes of elevated inflammatory markers would be things like acute tissue damage, physical injury, and acute active phases of chronic inflammation or flares of chronic inflammatory processes. So first of all, I'd like to turn to the ESR, erythrocyte sedimentation rate. And without wanting to go back to medical school, I think it is worth just reminding us what the ESR actually involves. So it's the rate at which red blood cells fall in a standardized tube. And that in turn is influenced by the extent to which certain proteins are present in the blood. And the lab will measure the ESR by calculating the distance in millimeters traveled in 60 minutes by erythrocytes that settle in anticoagulated blood under gravity. So if that concentration of proteins in the blood increases, such as when you get, for example, active proteins induced by inflammatory or infective conditions, then red blood cells form distinctive stacks where the cells clump together almost like coins. And you may remember these are called RULO. And these RULO then in turn make red blood cells fall at a faster rate than if they remained separate. It's almost like a clump of coins falling collectively rather than lighter coins falling individually. I've always sort of thought of it that way. Now, that in turn indicates the presence of an active or inflammatory condition. Now, although we look at ESR very commonly, in my opinion, it's perhaps the least specific inflammatory marker there is compared to things like CRP and plasma viscosity, because the age of the patient can affect it, the sex of the patient can affect it, and lifestyle can affect it, such as levels of alcohol intake and degrees of exercise taken. There may also be other factors such as high blood pressure, which can influence it. So ESR testing is perhaps not necessary in every situation, but for me, it can be a useful indicator in conditions such as PMR, polymyalgia rheumatica, or temporal arteritis. And also, obviously, we have to think about these days, it's very reproducible and it's extremely cheap. What are the normal levels of ESR? These do vary. So I'm going to start with children, and you should not ideally be seeing an ESR level over 10 in children. If you're seeing increased levels, certainly over 10 and certainly over 20 in children, that needs to be further investigated. So in younger men, by which I mean under the age of 50, I tend to look at normal results of being 15 or lower. Over the age of 50, that can creep up to 20 or lower. In women, you can give yourself a little bit more lee room. So under 50, a normal ESR can be seen as 20 or lower. And over the age of 50, 30 or lower. Also, don't forget that medication may also influence ESR levels. And I'm thinking of things like the contraceptive pill and theophylline. But others, such as commonly used steroids and aspirin, may actually decrease the level of ESR. So you have to be careful about the medication that a patient with a slightly abnormal ESR level is taking and think about those. Possible causes of a high ESR are legion. I have to say, very high levels of ESR usually have obvious causes and tend to confirm what we've been thinking about when we've ordered the test in the first place. But common ones we'd see in our practice across the board, you're thinking of cancers, Crohn's, inflammatory bowel disease, even diabetes, infections, some heart and kidney diseases, rheumatoid, SLE, the list is almost endless. But it's important to point out that there are no standard ranges for ESR measurements. Your local hospital may have different guidelines to neighbouring ones, and normal levels do vary by age and sex. These are not absolute, these are guideline tests. The same principles really apply to C-reactive protein. This was first discovered almost 100 years ago, and it's called CRP because it reacts with the C-carbohydrate antigen of the capsule of strep pneumonia. It's synthesized by the liver, and it's induced by interleukin-6. Now, this is produced during the acute phase of inflammation or an infection. Okay, so in many situations, CRP testing is much better than ESRs. If CRP levels are persistently elevated, the cause can be chronic inflammation. I'm thinking of things like hepatitis or bronchitis or chronic inflammation, such as rheumatoid. Also, compared to ESR, CRP tends not to be elevated in viral infections, things like leukemia or lymphoma, or some connective tissue diseases. And so it's very useful in patients with those conditions to monitor bacterial infections. If you're deciding whether someone with those conditions has a bacterial infection, a CRP test is better than an ESR. Again, if we look at typical CRP ranges, under 3, pretty much everyone would consider that to be normal. From 3 to 10, that can be seen as borderline normal or a very minor elevation. And lifestyle changes can significantly affect these. Personally, under 10, I tend not to worry. Things like obesity, the common cold, cigarette smoking, even a sedentary lifestyle can impact CRP to that level. 10 to 100 is said to be moderate elevation. Now, that always has surprised me, because when I'm getting CRP levels heading towards 100, I start to get alarm bells going off. But this is just seen as moderate elevation, where you have systemic inflammation. But that obviously can include malignancies. But rheumatoid, SLE, and other autoimmune diseases, even an MI could push the CRP up towards 100. And obviously things like bronchitis, and especially things like pancreatitis, can also do the same. When you're pushing above 100, that is definitely a marked elevation of a CRP. And I'm personally thinking of things like a significant bacterial infection, a major viral infection, and obviously things like vasculitis as well. Obviously, major trauma would do that, but that would be self-evident. I can't remember the last time I saw a level over 500, but that does occur, and that is highly elevated, and you're looking at very, very significant acute bacterial infections at that point. Now, if you're looking at plasma viscosity, and I have to say this is not a test I would routinely be considering, this measures the thickness of a person's blood plasma. And that in turn is primarily dependent on the concentration of things like fibrinogen, immunoglobulins, and general plasma proteins in their blood. Now, those proteins can increase and thicken for various reasons, but specifically things like inflammatory disease, neoplasms, and infection. But the plus point from my point of view compared to an ESR test, for example, is this reading is not affected by age. It is not affected by sex. However, it again is not perfect, because obesity can raise the PV. Okay? But because it's more technically challenging to do a PV test, certain laboratories, and it may be the same in your case where you are, may not offer it. And so this is why it is not something that would be routinely done. As a general point, if it is, the normal adult range would be about 1.5 to about 1.7, 1.75. Up to 1.8 is probably equivocal and advisable to repeat. 1.8 to 2 would suggest a chronic condition. 2 to 2.3 would be suggestive of an acute condition. One of the reasons I can do a PV would be if I was considering someone with a diagnosis of possible myeloma. Because if you've got a PV level of 2.3 or more, that tends to be highly suggestive of myeloma. And I think that is a very useful thing to do a PV test for if it's available in your particular locale. So inflammatory markers are not perfect. And I think that any abnormal results, and this is a really key take-home point to make here, have to be viewed in the context of the clinical findings and should not be diagnostic on their own count. What they should do is lead us towards further investigations and drilling down a particular diagnostic pathway that we feel is appropriate, either in primary or secondary care. So as general points that I've learned over the years about inflammatory marker tests, firstly, remember that tests for inflammatory markers are often requested unnecessarily, although their use in primary care does appear to be increasing. normal levels of inflammatory markers can be useful in ruling out some specific conditions, and I'm thinking of things like giant cell arteritis, myeloma, PMR, and infections of hip revisions here. They're often most helpful when looking to detect inflammation to confirm an already suspected disease process rather than using them as a scattershot approach. And also always remember that raised levels of inflammatory markers may be found in multiple conditions, particularly infections and some cancers. And in these cases, this can increase diagnostic confidence. But always remember that more information should be obtained to fully confirm a diagnosis. They're too non-specific, in my experience, to be a useful tool for diagnosing serious underlying diseases alone. And so we should be rarely using those in a situation like that. If you find an unexpected or an incidental finding of a raised inflammatory marker, and if your history and examination doesn't suggest a cause in your patient, then it's entirely reasonable to wait and see if symptoms develop. On the other hand, if levels are markedly raised, then the likelihood of disease is much higher. But again, history, examination, and focused investigations are still required to establish a diagnosis. Using multiple inflammatory markers simultaneously does not increase the ability to rule out disease, and so I always think these should generally be avoided. And remember too that ESR is typically considered the least specific inflammatory marker. CRP testing does have marginally superior diagnostic accuracy for infections. It's equivalent for autoimmune conditions and cancers, and so I always think this should be the first line test. And levels of CRP typically rise earlier in the course of an infection than other inflammatory markers. The other plus point about CRP levels is they tend not to elevate significantly with viral infections, with leukemias, and connective tissue diseases. Plasma viscosity testing is often a more reliable marker than ESR, as it's not affected by age or sex. The downside to PV testing is it may be impacted by obesity, and not all local laboratories may offer it as a service.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.
We have a great show today, but first, take a second to make sure you've subscribed to our show wherever you're listening to podcasts. It's the best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks.
Please take a moment to follow, rate, and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.